Let's jump back into the big book of Genesis and the story that we were in the middle of last time, Genesis chapter 27. We're going to pick up at verse 34 in a moment here, where Esau has come back with the wild game meal that his father Yitzhak had asked for him to prepare before he could give him the blessing, because at this time Yitzhak thinks that he's not very far from dying. Now, it's not accurate. He's just got that feeling. He's still got quite a few years left. But Esau discovers that his slightly younger twin brother has grabbed the blessing for himself through pretending to be Esau. And now Esau is begging his father to kind of undo that, or at least give him something. Now, the problem is really distinct in the culture that we're talking about here. Once the blessing ceremony had been gone through, it didn't even matter that it had been tricked out of Yitzhak. The words had been spoken, the ceremony requirements had been met, and so the blessing descends down through Jacob. Now, we already know that Jacob and Esau had made an arrangement earlier in their lives that this was the way it was supposed to be. But Esau was evidently preparing to go back on that deal. And so mom steps in and she tries to help things out. And so we're in the middle of this big mess. But we need to pay attention to this moment in the story where Esau is very distressed about being passed over at this later date for the blessing and the birthright, because it will be applied to in the book of Hebrews. And so we're going to go there in just a moment, but first let's get the background from the original story. So Genesis 27, 34, as soon as Esau heard the words of his father, and the words were basically, I have already blessed him, and that's the way it's going to be. He cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. And so he's got a lot of tears going on here. There's a lot of emotion. And he said to his father, bless me, even me also, O my father. So he wants anything. But he said, your brother came deceitfully. He's taken away your blessing. And Esau said, is he not rightfully named Jacob, or heel grabber, or metaphorically speaking, leg puller, tricker, deceiver? For he has cheated me these two times. Now, the two times apparently includes the time way back many years earlier, when Esau was starving, coming back from an unsuccessful hunting foray. And Jacob said, okay, I'll let you have some of my red stuff, my red lentil soup, if you'll sell me your birthright. And so Esau sold it to him. Oh, what good is a birthright if I'm dying here? And so he did not care enough about it back at that time. But now he does care about it. So in his head, he counts that earlier event as deceitful, as something where Jacob took advantage of him. So just get a little insight into his thinking at this particular moment in his life. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he's taken away my blessing. And then he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? So he's clearly upset at Jacob, but now he appeals to his dad once again. Certainly you've got something you can say over me, some sort of word, some sort of ceremony that's left. And Yitzhak answered and said to Esau, behold, I have made him lord over you. See, Jacob is now slotted to be the head of the clan, of the family, once Yitzhak has passed from the scene. He's going to be the prince of the encampment, the mayor of Tent City. Behold, I've made him lord over you, and all his brothers I've given to him for servants. And the brothers here is more generic, so all the family members. And with grain and wine I've sustained him, so he's given him the blessing of the land. What then can I do for you, my son? And Esau said to his father, Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and he wept. So there's the tears. There's the emotion. There is the great sorrow of the moment when he realizes it's all gone. Yitzhak his father answered and said to him, Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. So he now functions as a prophet. He allows the Holy Spirit of God to give him some insight as to what's going to happen with Esau's descendants. And so there is a hint here that they are not going to be around the best territories, that they're going to be in the rougher areas of the Middle East, the places that were not as well watered, the places that could not sustain huge flocks and herds and grain production. And that is exactly what's going to happen with Esau's descendants. They are going to be living in the land south and a little bit east of the south end of the Dead Sea. It's a very dry area. It'll be called Edom. It will be called it'll be the place where Petra is located, Mount Seir. And after a while, they will even be run out of there, but they will move westward into southern Canaan and be in that north part of the Sinai Peninsula, south of Beersheba. And again, it is a place that is very desolate. And so here is Yitzhak predicting that. Verse 40, by your sword you shall live. So there's going to be the use of force sometimes in the Edomites, the descendants of Esau. And you shall serve your brother. And so that goes back to Jacob, whose name will eventually become Israel. So in this sense, we're talking about the relationship between the Edomites, descendants of Esau, and the Israelis, descendants of Jacob. And the Edomites do spend quite some time being subservient to the people of Israel. And they resent it, by the way. And then when opportunity arises, they become a thorn in the side of the Israelis, a problem. So much so that God puts a curse upon them in other passages. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck. And so that's that future understanding that the Edomites are going to refuse to be under the thumb of the Israelis any longer. So a prophecy has been issued, a prediction of the future, based on what started here on this day. And then we get an insight into the personal attitude of Esau toward his brother Jacob. Now these men are twins, so they were born within moments of one another, grew up with one another. They have different types of personalities, that is true. And each of them had a parent that they bonded better with, Jacob with his mom, Esau with his dad. But we don't know what their relationship personally was like up to this point. But from his words, it seems as if there might have been a growing resentment between the two of them. But now for sure, Esau begins to hate his brother. Verse 41, now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching, and then I will kill my brother Jacob. So he begins plotting how to fix this problem of having the birthright and the leadership of the family taken from him by his brother's trick of dad. And that is, once dad is gone and off the scene, and my brother then takes control, I'll just kill him. And then I will take control like it should have been. And he was apparently sharing these feelings out loud to at least some people. He's got several wives right now, at least two, I think maybe three. And so he's probably griping to them about what happened and sharing his intention. And probably has in mind it'll be not very long, because remember, Yitzhak asked him to go get the wild game meal because he felt he was going to pass before very long, and he wanted to get this ceremony of blessing and transfer taken care of before that happened. So there's no reason that Esau wouldn't have thought that that was also true. So in his mind, probably a few weeks, maybe a few months, and then I will kill my brother, and I will take what is mine. So he's probably talking about that with his family members. He's probably been overheard by servants. Keep in mind, we've got probably several hundred servants that are working in this traveling community, this tent city, that is Yitzhak's company. So somehow it gets back to mom, back to Rebekah. Verse 42. But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now, he probably knows that things are not good. And I'm sure he expected it was not going to go well. I mean, if you trick your dad to get the birthright from your brother, you've got to know eventually that's all going to come out. And your brother is not going to be a happy camper. And if your relationship with your brother were already strained, you know it's just going to push it over the edge. So mom shares this information, which Jacob probably already suspected it was going to go down this negative route. But here's her advice. She says, now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother in Haran. Now that's up in Mesopotamia, back where she was raised. That's been 97 years ago that she left there. Because, and the reason we know that is in the chronology, when you put all of the facts and figures together about births and deaths and things like that, we know that Esau and Jacob are 77 right around now. And we know that it was 20 years into the marriage of mom and dad that they were born. So 97 years ago, she left home. And now she says, I need you to go back to my family territory and spend some time there far away from home. Why? Because that way maybe the anger of Esau will burn out. Verse 45, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him. Now, he's never going to forget it. What she means is he's going to forget about the idea of taking your life over it. So it'll burn down to a non-murderous attitude. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereft of both you both in one day? So this is her concern, is if her son Esau premeditatively murders her son Jacob, she will lose Jacob in the murder, but then the responsibility of the family would be to punish the murderer, which would be Esau. And so they will have to execute him, and that means mom has neither boy. In fact, the family then is left with no heirs whatsoever. It would be an absolute disaster, a mess. So she comes up with a plan. Let's separate the two of you for a while to make sure that Esau gets a cooling off period. And since he's expressed that he plans on doing it once dad is dead, since dad's still alive, now's the time to get him out of the area. And so mom goes to dad, not about the fact that the one boy wants to kill the other, but on a separate topic that we've already seen is a sore point. Chapter 27, verse 46, then Rebekah said to Yitzhak, I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. Which Hittite women? The women that Esau married. He married local pagan women, and they are raising families together. His first marriage was when he was 40, so that's been 37 years ago now. So she's been putting up with these daughters-in-law raising her grandkids, and they apparently have different customs. They have different attitudes. Perhaps they do different worship ceremonies. Maybe she doesn't get along with them either. And plus, there's more than one of them because he's married at least two, I think probably three at this time. And so she gives a reason to Yitzhak as to why I want Jacob to go back to my home territory. Here's the rest of the quote. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me? So if I end up with another bad daughter-in-law raising my grandkids, married to my favorite son. Now, she, of course, wouldn't have said that, I doubt. But certainly, Yitzhak understands that she has a special bond with Jacob. So her expression is, we have got to get him married to a proper woman from my family, just like you married me instead of one of the local women here. So Yitzhak called Jacob and blessed him and directed him, you must not take a wife from the Canaanite women. Arise, go to Padan Aram. Padan Aram is just a name for that area right around Haran. Haran is on a tributary of the Euphrates River, and it's got a nice flat plain area. And so this Padan has to do with that. And Aram is just the name of the larger region. So go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father. Now, Bethuel is long dead. And so where he's being sent is to that same family tree, just a lower branch. Take as your wife from there one of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. So go and marry one of your cousins. Now, why one of the cousins? Because as far as we know, that family line was supposed to be devoted to the same creator God that Yitzhak and Rebekah worship, and which they've taught Jacob and Esau to worship, even though I have my suspicions that Esau's wives are bringing other gods and goddesses into the equation, and that's part of the problem. So Jacob is supposed to go and marry somebody that, in theory at least, is of the same faith. And speaking of that faith, Yitzhak brings up who that God is in the next line. Verse 3, El Shaddai, which more than likely your translation, like the English Standard Version I'm using this time through, says something like God Almighty. And I've shared with you before, I think it's much more likely that Shaddai here is to mean that intimate place of your chest instead of the muscle place of your chest. And so this is my God, my intimate God, the God that I have a relationship with. El Shaddai bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. Now that is kind of a repeat of the blessing he's already received. May he give the blessing of Abraham to you, to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham. So he repeats the blessing, sends him off to the north country with the full understanding in the wording here, you will be coming back here to the promised land where you will raise your family. Because this is the land that God is giving to your line as the line of the promise, the line of the blessing. Verse 5, and thus Yitzhak sent Yaakov away, and he went to Padan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob's and Esau's mother. So now that trip is getting ready to take place. He's going to take off, and we'll come back to that trip in just a moment because there's some key things that happen on it. But first, we need to have a real quick review of how Esau reacted to Jacob being sent off to the north country to get a wife. Because remember, he's been married a good long time, at least 37 years, because he was married when he was 40, and now he's 77. Maybe I should mention this again. Don't get all shaken up or confused about the age, because when we think of somebody of that age, 77, we think about them being toward the very end of their life, because our average lifespans here in the Western world are up there into the 70s and the 80s. But if you take in consideration the long lives of the Abrahamic line, which are up into the sometimes second half of the second century, so up above 150, 160, things like that. When you take that as the average death time, that means being 77 or so is roughly equivalent to us being in our later 30s, the second half of our 30s. So that is certainly a bit of a time to delay getting married. And we kind of look at people that wait that long and wonder, why are you taking so long? Why aren't you getting married sooner in your life? But we still see them as having plenty of time to have a good marriage and start raising kids and have a family. So Esau started his family a long time ago, back in his younger years. And now his brother, who's delayed having a family, is being told, don't marry any Hittite. Go north and marry a cousin. And that is a slap at Esau, as far as he's concerned, because he's married two Hittites, at least two Hittites, possibly a third one as well. So verse 6, Esau saw that Yitzhak had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take a wife from there, and that he blessed him, and he directed him, you must not take a wife from the Canaanite women, and that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and gone to Padan Aram. So when Esau saw that the Canaanite women did not please Yitzhak, his father, Esau went to Ishmael and took as his wife, besides the wives that he had, Mahalat, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth. So Esau realizes that dad does not approve of his Canaanite wives any more than his mom approves of these Canaanite wives, and that somehow this played a role in dad, along with mom, sending Jacob north to get married to a cousin. And so Esau, you can see him, driven by his desire to have a good relationship with his dad, when he suspects that his Canaanite wives have displeased dad and mom, he goes to the Ishmaelite family. Ishmael is several years dead by now, so it's not Ishmael the person, it's Ishmael the people group. So he goes to the Ishmaelites, who are relatives of his, and who have been worshiping the Creator God, because Ishmael was raised by Abraham to worship the one true God, and we can presume that Ishmael passed that faith on at least to the first generation or two of his family members. So Esau goes and marries a girl from the Ishmael family, thinking that maybe this will help dad love him again, that maybe he can get his approval from dad for marrying in the family, just like Jacob is being told to marry into the family. So just an interesting little side dynamic in the family politics, as they were in the Jacob and Esau saga. Well, we're pretty much out of time for today, so tomorrow we'll pick up the story where Jacob leaves Beersheba and heads north to Haran, and what happens along the way regarding his faith.